Good morning. Good morning. Hey, thankful that you're here. My name is Preston. I'm the youth pastor. I want to welcome you if you're here in person or watching online. We're so grateful for your presence and your attendance and your time today. Man, I always love kind of when we switch season kits. If you don't know what that is, really, about every quarter we try to do a new bumper, we try to do new slides, new graphics. But one thing I've noticed, and I didn't mention this first service, is no matter how much I do, I can never make the cut for the bumper video. And I don't know why. I don't know if it's I got to reach a certain level of hours or something. I got to have a certain outfit on. But man, my goal for 2024 is to make one of those bumper videos. But again, we're so grateful that you're here and again that you've chosen to be here as we continue in our series called Heroes and Villains. It's a series we started in March. And we kind of took a pause last week, obviously, for Easter to kind of do an Easter message. And today, we're going to continue in this series as we look at characters in their Bible and their stories. And we begin to step back and say, what can we really learn from them? And really, not only what did they do right, but what did they do wrong? And we learned, and we talked about this in week one, that none of us in the room, none of us watching online, we are never truly a hero, and we're never truly a villain. There's times where we do heroic things, and there's times we do things that are not so heroic. And all of us have the ability to follow God or to walk away from God. And today, I want to look at a character in the Bible that maybe you would be surprised that we would talk about. So I want to encourage you, if you do have your phone, if you do have the Bible app on your phone, to not only open it up, but hit the More tab, hit the Events tab, and then hit Forest Park Church. Because when you do that, you'll get my notes for the entire message today. As I know Scott does, and I do as well, we sometimes get clicker happy, and we'll go to a slide, and then we'll click through it too quick before you can write it down. So in order for you not to miss anything, you can always follow our notes every Sunday by opening the Bible app, going to events, and clicking on our church. It's a way to make sure you don't miss anything. So again, as we jump into part four today, I really thought about who do I want to talk about? What character? I mean, I could pick 100 different characters in the Bible and talk about their stories, talk about what they did, what they didn't do. But sometimes I want to take a step back and say, okay, where's somewhere we weren't expecting to go? Because it's easy sometimes to do the characters we know, but what about sometimes doing the characters we don't expect? And so today, what I want to do is I want us to look at the life and the legacy of Judas. And I know that when I say that, when I talk about wanting to talk about the life and legacy of Judas, it's tempting for us to kind of shiver a little bit, right? When we think about Judas's life, when we think about his legacy and his name is spoken, we think about what he did. And as we just reflected on Easter Sunday, right, Easter doesn't really happen in part without Judas's story. The cross doesn't happen if he does not turn him in. And so his betrayal is a part of our story as much as the resurrection and the cross is as well. So what can we learn about Judas, good and bad? One of the things I know is if you went downtown today and you just interviewed people on the street and said, just tell me one villain in the Bible, almost everyone would say, hey, Judas is a villain. Because we know Judas. We know his story. We know the treachery that he did. We know the acts that he committed. And he's someone easy to point out. But what do we really know about Judas outside of him just turning Jesus in for 30 pieces of silver? Most of what we read about his life and his legacy in the Gospels is very few and far between. And in fact, there's nothing written about his life before Jesus. Who was he? What did he do before he met Jesus? And so today what I want us to do, as weird as it may sound, is I want to show you really quickly at the top of the message today. I'm not going to spend the bulk of my time doing this. We'll talk about what we learn at the end. But what did Judas get right? What's some of the things he did that we can actually stop and say, wow, like that was the right decision to make? What is something he did that we can stop and say, what can I actually look to in Judas and say, that's what I should be doing? Is there a lot? No, obviously. But there is some. And so some of it may seem basic, but I want to take time today to make sure that we realize that Judas' story isn't all bad. In fact, if you read 99% of the verses about him, it's always his failures. He followed Jesus for 3 years, but the only thing we really read about him is the mistakes he made, which in some ways makes me sympathetic towards him, because imagine if someone took a video camera and recorded your life for 3 straight years, and out of everything they could write down about what they observed in 3 years of your life, they just chose to write down the negative, the mistakes, the failures that you made. I think all of us can admit if someone was writing down my life for 3 straight years, they would find plenty of things they can write down about the balls I dropped, the things I did wrong. And so what can we learn from Judas that is more worthy than we would rather admit? The first thing I want us to look at, and it seems basic, but there's something to this, is that Judas answered the call to follow Jesus. Judas was one of the 12. He was one of the 12 that was called by Jesus to follow him. And when you follow Jesus, there was this kind of understanding that you were going to have to leave behind a lot of things in your life. And while Judas' story when he was called by Jesus to follow him is not recorded in the Bible for us to read, we do know, based on Jesus calling other disciples, that when he called people to follow him, it was very risky. When we read in Mark chapter 1 about when Jesus came and called Peter and Andrew and James and John to follow him, this is what it says. Right away, Peter and Andrew left their nets and followed him. And then Jesus went a little further and he saw James and John in their boat repairing their nets. And at that very moment, he called them. He said, "Follow me." And they followed him, leaving their father with his workers. So even four of the 12 disciples right there, one third, you see, when Jesus said, "Follow me," they had to leave behind their work. They had to leave behind their income. They had to leave behind their assets, like their boats and their net. They even had to leave behind their families. James and John immediately left their father. And so this idea that following Jesus was just simple, like, "Oh, I'll go follow God. That's easy. Yeah, okay, Jesus, I'll go with you." It actually required Judas to leave his family, leave his work, leave his hometown, leave his comfortability in what he knew to follow a man he probably barely knew at the time. And so while it seems basic, again, while it seems elementary, the truth is Jesus in his 3 years ministry ministered to thousands of people. Jesus came into contact with thousands of people in his 3 years, whether he healed them, preached to them, called them out. He came into contact with thousands of people in 3 years, yet he only called 12. And out of the 12, Judas was one. And Judas's answer was, "Yes, I will follow you. I will leave behind everything I know to follow you and sit under your teaching." So at a basic level, we see that Judas did something right. He chose to follow Jesus. Now, his story along those 3 years is obviously a bumpy one, but at the beginning, he chose to sacrifice and follow what Jesus wanted for him. One of the other things we may not know about Judas, and if you're not careful, you'll kind of read over it, that we can learn and see is that Judas did miracles. Judas did perform miracles. And I think sometimes when I say Judas, and we think about Judas in the Bible, we think about this guy who's always sitting in the corner, kind of in the shadows lurking. And for 3 straight years, he's just kind of sitting there like a snake in the grass, biding his time, waiting for the perfect opportunity 3 years in to just stab Jesus in the back, metaphorically speaking. And we just see him as like, from the beginning, he was just waiting for his chance to turn him in. But actually, when you read the Gospels and you read the 3-year ministry of Jesus, you see that Judas was present for a lot of the miracles that Jesus performed. He was there for the feeding of the 5,000. He was there for raising of the dead of Lazarus. He was there for the healing of many people's sickness. And so we see in this big picture that Judas wasn't this guy who from the beginning was always just kind of buying his time, waiting for his opportunity to strike. He was a part of a lot of the great things that Jesus did in 3 years. And not only was he a part in being able to witness it, he was actually a part in doing it himself. In Matthew chapter 10, Jesus calls all 12 of his disciples together because he has a mission he wants to give his 12 disciples. And in Matthew 10, this is what it details. It says, Jesus called all of his disciples, all 12, and gave them all power over unclean spirits to throw out demons and to heal every disease and every sickness. And here are the names of his 12 disciples. And Matthew lists all of them. And at the end, he says, and Judas, who betrayed Jesus. Jesus intentionally gathers his disciples together and gives them power. He gives them authority to perform miracles. And one of the people he gives that power and authority to is Judas, the very man who would later betray him. A man who is classified by us today as this purely evil, villainous character in the Bible was given power intentionally by Jesus to do great things. We're talking about a man who was going to cast out demons, a man who was going to raise the dead, a man who was going to heal every disease in that time because Jesus gave him the authority to do so. And so maybe if we look at that, Judas was actually wanting to be a part of the mission. Maybe he actually wanted to be a part of seeing people healed, of seeing people redeemed, of seeing people freed from captivity. Maybe Judas actually wasn't just kind of sitting on the sidelines for 3 years. He was actually wanting to be a part of watching God do great things in and through him. And so, yes, it does seem elementary, but true. Yes, Judas did say yes to follow Jesus. And Judas did perform miracles. Granted, it was through the power of God, not his own power, but he did perform miracles. And the last thing I think we can look at in Judas's life and say this was actually admirable is that Judas stayed through many difficulties. Obviously not at the end, and we'll get to that at the end of my message. But he stayed through a lot. And Judas's story is not just a tragedy. It's also sometimes something to look at and say, wow, I don't know if I would have done the same thing. For 3 years, he followed Jesus. And let me say this, following Jesus was not a cakewalk. I know maybe today we think it's easy to follow Jesus because we're in a Christian country and no one really hates you if you're a Christian and we sit in AC buildings and we're comfortable. But in that time, following Jesus was not easy. His followers were mainly nomadic, meaning they had no home. They would set up camp and then gather their supplies, go into town and hope and pray that someone would be generous to let them stay with them for the night for free. And then oftentimes they were kicked out of those towns and persecuted and beaten because of Jesus' controversial teachings. And then they would walk to the next town and they would camp in between their visits to different cities. And they were hated by a lot of people. As much as we know that they were loved by some, they were hated by many. Yet in those 3 years of always traveling, always setting up camp, barely having a real meal to eat because they didn't have a lot of money, Judas stayed through all of it. He didn't leave when things got difficult. He didn't leave when people started to hate Jesus. He didn't leave when he was beaten because of what Jesus taught or chased out of town. I'll put it in today's terms so we can understand. Following Jesus was not like this. The 12 disciples didn't drive Mercedes. They probably drove what Pastor Scott drives, a Prius. They didn't stay in 5-star hotels with free meals comped by the local synagogues. They weren't invited to speak at huge church conferences, given a platform to monetize their name and go on book tours. That's not their life. Their life was actually one of a lot of rejection, a lot of hurt, a lot of hunger, a lot of trying to even figure out how to get through the next day because they had almost nothing to eat, nothing to survive off of. And Judas was a part of this 3-year journey. It was not an easy journey. It was a journey that required a lot of sacrifice. And so when Jesus in Matthew 10 comes and says, hey, everybody come to me. I'm giving you power to perform miracles and I'm going to send you on a mission. The next question is, then what's the mission going to look like? And Jesus says, here's your mission. I'm giving you power to perform miracles. Now here's what your mission looks like. Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse those with skin diseases, throw out demons. You received without having to pay, therefore pay or give without demanding payment. Workers deserve to be fed, so don't gather gold or silver or copper coins for your money belt to take on the trip. Don't take a backpack, don't take 2 shirts, don't take sandals, and don't take a walking stick. Right there, here's the logistics of the mission. You're gonna go into towns, and you cannot take a change of clothes, you cannot take a backpack. I don't want you to bring any money with you. And when you perform miracles, do not ask for money in return. If people want to give you something like a place to sleep or a meal to eat, take it, but you will not demand to be paid for your services. Physically, that's a lot. Not only do I have to go, but I can't take a change of clothes, I can't wear shoes, I can't take a backpack, I can't even take money on my wallet, on my person. Like, this is a physically demanding journey and mission. It wasn't only physical, though. It was an emotional and spiritually demanding journey, because Jesus goes on to say, and when you go, know that I'm sending you as sheep among wolves. Watch out for people, because when you go to these towns, they will hand you over to councils and they will beat you. They will haul you in front of kings and governors and ask you to give an account of what you're doing. Everyone will hate you on account of me. But whoever stands firm until the end will be saved. Whenever they harass you in one city, escape to the next. Not only was it physically demanding, when they went to these cities to perform miracles, many people would hate them for it. When they went to these cities to heal the sick, many of the church leaders would beat them. When they went to these towns to do and perform and bring healing to those who are hurting, they would have to escape out the back alley because they were going to get thrown in prison. They would have to be brought in front of kings and give accounts of what they're doing unless they were to be put in jail or killed. Here's the mission. Don't take money. Don't take food. Don't take an extra change of clothes. Don't even wear shoes. And also, the good news is people are going to hate you and beat you and chase you out of town. What a great mission. We love the beginning. God, I have power to cast out demons. And then we find out the mission is actually like everyone's going to hate you and you can't even take a change of clothes. And we're like, that sounds a little difficult. But for what it's worth, and I only say this because Scripture doesn't give us any insight, I assume that for the most part, Judas went. Judas took the challenge. We don't hear any recording about Judas back talking Jesus and saying, let's do some negotiation here, dude. Like, can I just get 20? Like, can I just bring 20 with me? I'm not asking to bring a lot, but can I bring 20? Bro, I've got like bad feet. Can I just get like some kind of sandals? Rainbows, something? Bro, can I just go like for half the time and then come back early so I can get ready for the next one? For what it's worth, from what we see, Judas went. Judas didn't complain, and Judas didn't try to negotiate himself out of it, which, in some degree, is more than I think a lot of us, including myself, would be willing to do. Most of our mission today as New Testament church people is to tell people about Jesus, love them, and tell them the good news. Then, imagine if Jesus came and said, hey, sell everything you have. I don't want you to have a penny in your bank account. And also, I want you to walk over to Hertford, to Camden, to Currituck, to South Mills, and I want you to tell them about me. And guess what? When you go there, they're going to hate you and try to kill you for it. Will you go? A lot of us probably not. Yet Judas is the man that we villainize and make fun of and mock and say, I could never be like Judas. He was such a terrible person. But in this story, it sounds like Judas had more faith than a lot of us do at times, including myself. He was willing to be part of a mission that was not easy. It was not an easy mission. And his story, yes, is tragic, and we're going to get into that. But there is beauty within his story, very small slivers of beauty. But there's something to look at in Judas's life and say, man, that was admirable, what you chose to do. You may have not got it all right, but in that moment, that was something I can look to. But Judas's story is not a beautiful story, and you know that, I hope. Judas's legacy is not a legacy of what we teach our kids to be like. You don't teach your kid at bedtime, hey, I want you to be like Judas when you get older. He's not an example. He's not a figure we teach our kids about of what it means to be a Christian, and it's the opposite. I don't want you to be like this man. I want you to learn from his mistakes. So what can we learn from Judas other than the good? Well, luckily, there's plenty of bad to pull from. I'll give you four things I think that we can learn from Judas's mistakes. Number one, what we learn from Judas's life is that giving some is not enough. And when I say that, I'm not talking about your money. I'm not talking about your time. I'm talking about your life. Judas wanted to give parts of his life to God, but not all of his life to God. He wanted Jesus to use his time. Jesus, I'll follow you for 3 years. I'll give you my time. He wanted Jesus to use his talents. Jesus, I'll go on the mission. Use me. I'll do some cool miracles and help people be healed. But he never really gave all of his life to Jesus. There were parts of his life that he kept to himself and he refused Jesus to change. He sat under Jesus' teaching and refused to allow it to impact and change parts of his world that were broken and ugly. One of the things you know about Judas, other than the fact that he betrayed Jesus, is the fact that he was an incredibly greedy person, filled with love of money. I mean, he turned into the Son of God for 30 pieces of silver, for goodness sake. But in a story in Luke chapter 12, there's a man who comes to Jesus, and he says, Jesus, I have an issue. I need your help. He said, my father has died, and my brother has taken all of the inheritance from my father, and he refuses to give me my 50%. What should I do? And in a moment like that, you would think Jesus would say, that's not just. That's not fair. You tell your brother that he needs to give to you what is yours. But instead of saying that, Jesus says something more interesting. He says, actually, here's what I say. Watch out. Guard yourself against all kinds of greed. After all, one's life is not determined by what you own, even if you're wealthy. Jesus understands something about humans, that is, we have a temptation to be greedy. Maybe not with money, maybe your time. Maybe you refuse to give your time, your talents, maybe your money. But Jesus knew that human nature is naturally greedy. We want what we want, and we want all of it, and we want more of it. We got this much, but I want more. Ever watch the Willy Wonka, Charlie and Chocolate Factory? I want more. We are greedy people, and he knew this about us, and that's why he says, watch out. Greed is dangerous. Your life is not about how much you can get. In fact, Jesus' mission was about how much you can give. And he knew this about Judas, too. He taught about greed. He talked about becoming last instead of first. Yet Judas constantly lived a life that was all about how he could get more money and how he could get more power. That's why when John writes about Judas, he doesn't write very glowingly. He says Judas said this not because he cared about the poor people, but because he was a thief. He stole money from Jesus. There was a purse that he would carry, and any donations they got for the ministry would go in the purse, and Judas would steal out of it when no one was looking for himself. Not only was he a person who was willing to betray Jesus for 30 pieces of silver, he was a person who was willing to, over time, steal from Jesus. So this was a man who was greedy. And so is the temptation with us, that we not only want to follow God, but we don't want to follow God all the way. That's a temptation for all of us, myself included. We want to trust God with our finances. God, I'll trust you with my money. But when it comes to my marriage, I've got that under control. I don't need your help. I know how to handle this. God, I trust you with my health, but my kids, I know you should say I should do it this way, but I know how to raise them. They're my kids. I know what's best for them. God, I trust you with my retirement. Take it, use it for what you want, but my time, outside of this 1 hour on a Sunday, you're not getting an ounce of it. I'm going to use the time Monday through Saturday for what I want, not for what you want. And the hard truth for you and the hard truth for me today to swallow is that when it comes to Judas's life and legacy, we have to know this to be true. Partial obedience is not obedience. Telling God you will only follow him in certain areas of your life, but not all areas of your life, is refusing to allow God to be king of your life. He's king of your marriage, but not king of your checkbook. He's king of your time, but not king of your mental health. And Judas struggled to come to Jesus and say, everything I have, everything I am, take it, use it, transform it, change it, help me grow into what you want me to be. Simply coming to God and saying, you can have some of my life, God, but I want to keep this the way it is because I like it this way, is refusing to allow God to be king of your life. And when Jesus says, follow me, he is not asking you that you can give some of your life. He is saying, if you follow me, you must give it all. And if you're not willing to give it all, then don't give any. And Judas's life is an example of what it looks like when we refuse to allow God to transform and change every part of our life, not just some of it. And the second thing we learn from Judas is that God's timing is really better. Part of Judas's downfall is not only that he was greedy, it's that he was impatient. He was a person who joined the cause of Jesus because he believed that Jesus was coming to overthrow the government. Jesus came so that he could take Rome out of power and give the Jewish people our rightful place back, leading our land, leading our people. That is what a lot of the Jewish people think the Messiah is like. They want the Messiah to come and to throw the government out and put the Jewish people in power. And for 3 years, that's what Judas was expecting Jesus to do. And I can imagine in the beginning, I'm just thinking here, Judas in the beginning was like, Jesus, this ministry stuff is cool. I love the miracles. I love that you're getting a following. I love that people are kind of like rallying around you. I love that we're gaining traction. I think it's cool what you did for Lazarus. That stuff's cool. But as he kind of kept going, and 2 years came, and the third year of the ministry came, I can kind of sense Judas getting a little frustrated and impatient. Like, Jesus, I like the ministry we were doing and the miracles we were doing in the beginning, but the clock's ticking. When are you going to actually do what you came here to do? When are you going to actually do something about Rome? When are you actually going to do something about the people persecuting and killing our people and taxing our people? And I would see Judas, I'm sure, metaphorically in his mind saying, like, he just wants to grab Jesus by the shoulder, shake him, and be like, can you hurry up? I've been waiting for 3 years now for you to make your move. When are you going to do it? But what Judas failed to know is that Jesus never came to do that. Jesus' mission was never about power and authority. It was about sacrifice and service and grace to all people. And just like Judas, you and myself can become impatient with God's timing. Judas' impatience is what led to Judas' frustration. And Judas' frustration is ultimately what led to Judas' disobedience. What I'm trying to get at is, if you're not careful, your impatience will turn you against God, because you will begin to have this attitude that, God, I prayed for it. It's supposed to happen now. It's this demand of God to say, you should be working on my schedule. You should be working according to my calendar. You should be working according to my timeline. I asked, I prayed, I sought, I knocked, and yet you have not done anything. And that's what leads to frustration. And that's what leads us to say, why should I even continue to follow God at all? I've prayed and he has not answered me. I've prayed and he hasn't done it yet. And that's why the psalmist writes in Psalm 27:14, it's a very simple verse, but it's powerful. He says, just wait for the Lord. Be strong. Let your heart take courage. Wait for God. Learn to wait. And not only wait, but realize that it's more about what he wants than what you want. And that the more you come to God in prayer and demand that he works according to your calendar and your schedule, the more, I promise you, you will leave defeated and disappointed with your faith. Because your faith is not about what you want. What if I told you literally everything you've been praying for in the last month, if you've even been praying for anything? If everything you've been praying for, what if I told you God's answer to those prayers is no? God, will you help me here? No. God, will you change my work situation? No. God, will you help do this differently in the community? No. If his answer to your prayers is no, will you wait? Will you trust? Will you follow? Will you worship in spite of the no? Judas didn't. And it's what led him to take his life and Jesus' life into his own hands. The third thing we can learn about Judas' life is that ultimately, worship is greater to God than progress. Not only was Judas impatient, he valued the wrong things. He saw the world through a material lens about how much he could gain, how much he could accumulate. And Jesus told his followers to shift their perspective, to look through the world in a different lens of what it means to serve, to become last, to value others more important than yourself. It's part of why God chose on the seventh day to rest when he created the world, because he knew that human beings would have a tendency to always pursue progress and not worship. And if they did not take time to stop and to worship and to rest, they would never learn the key to what it means to have a full, fulfilling life. We live in a country, we live in a culture where progress is everything. What you can accomplish, what you can get done is really the only thing that matters. Part of the reason America is so far along, economically speaking, is because we are a culture where as soon as we meet one goal, we immediately set another. As soon as we finish one project, we immediately put another one on our calendar. As soon as we achieve something, we have no time for celebration. It's time to do something else. Yet God's kingdom is vastly different. It's not about what you can do and what you can get done. It's about who are you worshiping, and are you making time for that? in Judas's mind, worship was a waste of time. That same mindset that we need to value progress over what it means to worship God has infiltrated not only our country and our society, it's infiltrated our church as well. Not just our church, churches across the country. We have a mindset in our ministries and in our cultures and our buildings that as soon as we do something great here at Forest Park, we should immediately be thinking about what to do next. I'll be taking my students to summer camp at Liberty this July, and it's 99% of the time the best week of our entire calendar year. It's like the highlight of the whole entire calendar. And without fail, when I drop them kids off on Friday, July 5th, after we're done, come Sunday, the question that will be asked to me is, what is next? What's next? What are we doing next? When are we going there? What are we doing here? What are we going to do for this? What's next? No time to pause, to worship, to celebrate. And in the church culture, we constantly ask, what's next? Easter was great, but what about the summer? When are we going to add a third service? When are we going to add a new campus? When are we going to get out of debt? When the heck are we going to fix the projectors for the final time? You know, when are we going to go back to Ecuador? When are we going to do this? When are we going to make this happen? And man, I just want to tell you, at Forest Park, especially over the last 4 years since the pandemic, we have learned as a staff that we are not going to be a church that's constantly fixated on progress and what's next. We want to be a place where people come in and realize that our value here is learning to pause, slow down, and worship. Regardless of how we grow, how big the budget gets or doesn't get, how many butts are in the seat, doesn't matter. Are we learning to worship? And that's why when we talk about Judas's life and how he saw worship, we talk negatively about it. In John's gospel, we talked about this story last week for Easter, so this is kind of just a repeat, but listen. Mary came to Jesus, and she had a pound of expensive perfume, and she anointed Jesus' feet with the perfume via her hair. And she wiped his feet with her hair in this expensive perfume, and Judas looked at Mary in that moment and said, why was this perfume not sold for money that we could have given to the poor? And right after that verse is when John said he doesn't care about the poor. He was actually stealing from Jesus. So in this story where Mary is worshiping God by pouring out a year's worth of wages on this one bottle of perfume and pouring it all out on Jesus' feet, Judas looks at it and says, what a waste. In fact, Mark, which we read last Sunday, Mark's account of this very same story I like better because it's a little bit more plain. He says, there were some, I put Judas in parentheses because we know he was talking about Judas. There were some who grew angry at this and said to each other, why was the perfume wasted like that? And I think sometimes, whether we know it or not, that's kind of how we see some of what we choose to do in our life. I want to tell you some really good news. You may not think it's good, but it's something I want you to take to heart because it can set you free this morning. You are not wasting your life by choosing to slow down. You're not wasting your life by choosing to follow God instead of trying to get more money. You're not wasting your life by learning to give your money away instead of hoarding it up to be the biggest and baddest person in Elizabeth City. You aren't wasting your time by coming 2 hours and learning what it means to serve instead of get. Because really, what is your life? James makes it clear. Your life is like a mist. It's here today, and then it vanishes. I know your life is long to some of us who have lived longer. You've lived 60, 70, 80 years, some of you. You've lived through a lot of pain, a lot of heartache, and it feels like at times that pain and heartache will never end. But I want to tell you, in the grand scheme of life, in the grand scheme of eternity, your life is nothing more than a blimp on the radar. It's here, and it's gone. And I want to challenge and encourage you to see your life as valuable, that your time is valuable, and what you choose to prioritize is ultimately the legacy you will leave when you're gone. Will you be a person who's remembered for not always chasing the next big project, the next big paycheck, the next big thing, but will you be remembered as someone who would say they didn't have the most money, they weren't the most famous, but man, they loved God, and man, they tried their best to help other people know him. Ultimately, Judas didn't. Worship was unnecessary. It was a part of life he saw as a waste because he knew that progress in his mind was more important. But in God's kingdom, worship is the only thing that's important. The last thing we can learn about Judas today is knowing about Jesus is not enough. Ultimately, Judas' life boils down to this truth. He knew a lot about Jesus, but he did not know Jesus. He knew who Jesus was. He knew what Jesus was doing to some degree, but he never knew Jesus personally. He never allowed Jesus to become anything more than a nice, good teacher who said some really cool things from time to time, and he challenged the religious people. And I want to tell you, man, if Jesus is never more to you than someone that you think was a nice, moral man, was a man who taught on some really cool concepts that I can take and post on my Instagram story, if he's never more to you than just a nice, good man who taught some really nice, good principles to live my life morally by, you will never find true peace, true freedom, and true life by knowing about Jesus that way. It's only those of us who know Jesus personally that truly live a life full of joy, freedom, and peace. And in fact, I want you to see this because Judas was the only one of the 12 who did not believe Jesus was anything more than a teacher. Everyone else knew him as God. They knew what Jesus was. He was God in the flesh. At the Last Supper, Jesus invites his 12 disciples to come eat, and he tells them, "One of you tonight is going to betray me." And I want you to see how every disciple responded to that claim that one of them would betray Jesus. That evening, Jesus took his place at the table with his 12 disciples. As they were eating, he said to all of them, "I'm telling you right now, one of you is going to betray me." Deeply saddened, every one of the 11, except for Judas, looked at him and said, "I'm not the one, am I, Lord?" Judas was the only one in that moment that looked at Jesus and said, "It's not me, is it, teacher?" I want you to see that clear distinction. Every disciple except Judas called him Lord because they knew he was not just a teacher. He taught things, but he was not a teacher. He was God. It was only the one who would betray him that refused to acknowledge who he truly was. To Judas, he was nothing except a good teacher who did good things. And if Jesus is only a good moral example for your life, it will not last. And I'm here to tell you today, man, if Jesus was nothing more than a good teacher, I am wasting my time even being up here right now. Jesus as a good teacher is not worth us coming to celebrate and worship. Jesus as a good teacher and a moral man was not willing for us to sacrifice our money and our time to tell people about him. It's only when Jesus is really believed to be more than a teacher, God in the flesh who died for us, that we are willing to sacrifice and live and go in his name. And whether you like it or not, whether I like it or not, I don't care who you are, I don't care what you believe today, but here's the truth for every human being in this world. Either here in your lifetime or after you breathe your last breath, every single one of us has to answer one question. And that question is, who is Jesus to you? Who is he to you? Not who was he to your parents, not who he is to your pastor. Who is he to you? And the thing I know about Judas, as bad as it was, he betrayed Jesus for mere 30 pieces of silver. And his story ends tragically. Because he had no hope and no redemption. This is my opinion. You can disagree and that's okay. I truly believe if Judas believed that Jesus was more than just the man, that he was God, when he betrayed him, he would have came back to Jesus, asked for forgiveness, and God would have forgiven him. I truly believe forgiveness was in an arm length away from Judas if he asked for it. Why do you say that? Two reasons. One, there's no Bible verse that tells us betraying a brother is an unforgivable sin. Number two, we look at the response that Jesus had to the Apostle Peter. When Judas betrayed Jesus, his story ends very sad. This is what happened. Judas betrayed Jesus, saw that he was condemned to die, and he felt deep regret. He returned the 30 pieces of silver to the elders and the chief priests, and he said, "I did wrong because I betrayed an innocent man." Again, Jesus was nothing more than just an innocent man. What happened? Jesus threw the pieces of silver into the temple and left, and then he went and hung himself. He had no hope. He had no future because he didn't believe that Jesus was more than just a teacher. If he would have believed that Jesus was more than a teacher, that he was God himself, he may have had the same story that we see from the Apostle Peter. Peter also betrayed Jesus. He didn't turn them in, but he certainly turned his back on them. In his darkest days, he denied him three times to save his own life. He betrayed Jesus by denying him three times. And when Jesus came back from the grave, he went back to his disciples and he went to Peter and he said, Peter, do you love me? Peter said, yes, Lord, I love you. He goes to him a second time. Peter, do you love me? And he says, yes, Lord, I love you. And then Jesus asked him a third time, Peter, do you love me? And Peter gets really sad at this point. He says, Jesus, you know everything. You know I love you. And because of that love for Jesus, because of his willingness to repent and know that he did wrong and to ask Jesus to forgive him, here's how his story ends. Jesus looks at him and says, okay, then follow me. Forgiveness was granted to the one who turned his back on him because he knew that Jesus was more than just a teacher. He knew that Jesus was God. And because he knew that Jesus was God, he knew that all he had to do was ask for forgiveness and it would be given to him. And it was. Jesus said, okay, let's start over then. Let's go back to the beginning. Fresh slate. Follow me. A simple command that was given at the beginning is now given at the end. Peter receives forgiveness and redemption and restoration because he repents and asks for it. Judas had no hope. And his hopelessness, because he refused to acknowledge who Jesus was what led him to take his own life instead of seek forgiveness. Here's the truth. Judas's greatest lesson for us is just because you're close to Jesus does not mean you know Jesus. Just because you got perfect attendance and can sit in a seat 1 hour a week for 52 weeks a year does not mean you know Jesus. Just because you go to Bible study and open the Bible and pray does not mean you know Jesus. Just because you're a part of a group or you're a part of a serving team here and you give does not mean you know Jesus. He walked with him for 3 years, closer than any of us ever have, and yet he did not know who he was. It's only those of us who know Jesus that know and can receive a new hope, a new life, and a new future. Maybe you're here today and you wonder why you constantly find yourself frustrated with God and frustrated with your life and frustrated because you can't seem to get any peace or any joy or any freedom, no matter how much you come to church, no matter how much you pray. Have you ever stopped to consider maybe you just know a lot of cool things about Jesus, but you really never truly got to know him as your Lord, as your King? Because those of us who know him as King doesn't mean we don't struggle, but we know that there's a greater hope for us than this world. And that's the hope that we hold on to as Christians. Let me pray, then we'll take communion together. Father, thank you so much for this opportunity. Thank you for the life and the legacy of Judas, as sad as it is, as depressing as it can be. God, we can learn a lot. We can learn a lot from what he did well, but also learn a lot from what he did wrong. And while his end of his story is tragic and depressing, God, we know that that doesn't have to be the end of our story. Our story can have redemption. Our story can have hope. Our future can be bright when we choose to know you personally. God, I pray for everyone here. I pray for everyone watching at home that may be hurting, may be depressed, may feel like they have nothing left to give and they are at the end of themselves. I pray that in these moments where they feel like they have nothing left to give, they would do the only thing that can truly give them life. Turn to you and ask for forgiveness and follow you. It's only when we know you that we can have life. God, we're so thankful for that. We're so thankful you don't give up on us. I'm so thankful that even when I turn my back on you, you don't let me turn my back on you. You force me back into your house and you love me even when I don't deserve it, God. I've never deserved it. I never will. But you have been good to me when I have failed to be good to you. And that could have been Judas's story. If only. May that not be our story. Pray in your name. Amen. Hey guys, before we close together, we always take the first Sunday of every month to take communion as a faith family. We do this for a couple reasons. We want to remember all the good things that Jesus has done. And at his Last Supper, he tells his disciples, do this in remembrance of me. And then Paul in 1 Corinthians tells us that as often as you get together, do this in remembrance of me. So what we're going to do is, as soon as this video plays in just a second, as the video is playing, use that as your opportunity to get up, go to one of the tables in the back, take a piece of bread, take a cup, come sit back down, and then I'll lead us through the elements. That should only take a couple of minutes. If you do not want to participate, cool, no pressure. We don't love you less. God doesn't love you less if you don't want to take communion. In fact, if you feel like someone's judging you because you don't get up, point them out. I'll have Camilla throw them out of the service for you. No big deal. Just joking, of course. Look, there's no judgment here. We're a faith family. This is an opportunity to celebrate together. If you don't want to, just remain in your seat. So this video is going to play. As it plays, you can get up and go to the back and get your communion elements. There we go. When I think about communion, you know, I think about obviously we're called to remember. Do this in remembrance of me. I liken it a lot of times to wedding anniversary. If you're married in the room, you know, me and Carla, we celebrate 6 years but this June 2nd. June 2nd is our wedding anniversary. And when we stop to celebrate each June 2nd, what we're not doing is choosing to stop and celebrate and remember how pretty the dress was. We're not stopping to celebrate and remember how great the cake was. We're not stopping to celebrate and remember how crazy those people danced on the floor that night. That was so funny. We're not stopping to celebrate and remember those things. We're stopping to celebrate and remember every June 2nd that for another year, we kept our promise. We have been faithful and we have loved each other. And when we are called as Christians to stop and take the bread and take the cup and remember, we are called to stop and remember that even 2,000 years later with a bunch of broken misfits like you and me, God's promises still hold true. He has not left us. He has not forsaken us. The power that comes through his sacrifice on the cross and his blood still has the power to transform souls. And when we stop to take these elements, it's a remembrance that even today, no matter where I'm at, no matter how far off course I may feel like I am in this faith thing, God's promises are still true for you. His love for you has not changed. His faithfulness to you has not disappeared. He is still faithful. Let's pray. I'll take the bread together. Father, thank you for this bread. Thank you that it represents the body that was given for us. God, your life was not taken from you. You laid your life down. You gave it up willingly because you love us. Because your care as a father for his children is so amazing. And God, as we stop to take this bread, I pray that we would remember how it was broken, how it was battered, how it was beaten, and how ultimately that should have been us. But because of your love for us, it wasn't. And we celebrate that your promise is still good today. Pray in your name. Amen. If you take the bread together. You take the cup. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much that this cup represents your blood that was spilled for us. Not only were you beaten and battered and broken, God, but your blood spilled on that cross. It came from your hands, from your sides, from your feet, and you poured it out. As much as life changes, as much as we grow, God, one thing remains the same. Your blood is the power to give us life, and it's only through your blood that we can receive the life that we read about, the hope that we read about, the future that we're guaranteed. We're grateful that the blood of Christ still changes lives. God, as much as we may be dealing with, we can hope and know and trust that your promise that you will never leave us, never forsake us, doesn't change based on how well we perform or how well we do, but is rooted in what you did for us because you are a good, good Father. We're so grateful for that. We praise you for that in your name. Amen. Take the cup. A couple announcements and we'll let you go. Number one, if you're new here, we'd love to connect with you. We can go to fplive.org/connect and fill out a connect card on your phone. If you want to, you can do a physical copy. It's in the seat back in front of you. You can fill it out physically or virtually. Whether you do it either way doesn't matter. If you take it and drop it off at the New Hair area, we have a gift for you just to say thanks for coming. New Hair area is also a place you can get answers to your questions. So if you have questions about who we are, what we do, that's the place to go. If you don't have time because you have children and kidventure, you can drop off your New Hair card on the black table in the corner. Down the hallway, and you can pick up your gift there for free as well. Either way, we'd love to connect with you. And last but not least, the last thing to know is that next night, that's our youth program that meets on Sunday nights. I have the privilege of leading that for our 6th through 12th graders. So if you're 6th through 12th grader or you have one, we would love them to join us tonight at 5 o'clock for our next night. We feed them good food. We play games. We teach them about Jesus. So if you have a student, we'd love for them to join us tonight at Forest Park Church at 5 p.m. Last but not least, guys, if you can do Lisa Meads a favor, please take your cup and throw it in the trash can on your way out today. Love you guys. Have a great day.